Welcome back to the Wellspring Podcast. We're doing something a little bit different today. I've got Steve Head here, and we're going to talk to him about his company and some of what he's got going on. And then Scott's here with us as well. Just he might pipe in here and there. So that's what we've got going on. Me, Scott, and Steve Head. Yeah.
Steve goes to church here.
Yes.
Has been a member for a while, regular attender, and just wanted to share a little bit about what he's doing and some of the ministry that he's involved in and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, Steve, I don't know a whole lot about what you've got going on. We talked right before we started. You're the president of Great Wonders Production.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that. Tell me about yourself. What's going on?
You know, the name Great Wonders Productions is kind of funny. When I was a kid, we grew up in a very dysfunctional, poor family. And one time when I was about, I don't know, it seems like 8 or 9, something like that, there was some matchbook covers that said, draw Tippy the Turtle or draw the pirate. And you could send your drawing in and you might win a scholarship to this school, this art school in Chicago. Anyway, I drew my little Tippy the Turtle or whatever. And I took it to my mom and I told her I wanted to send this in to Chicago. And she just turned around and says, oh, you're going to do great wonders. You know, and just, you know, put me down. And so I never forgot that. It kind of stung, you know, and here I am 73 years old, and I never forgot that sarcastic remark. So when we decided to create a nonprofit organization to basically to make a movie that I started 7 years ago, I thought, well, what better name than Great Wonders Productions? You know, we're gonna do some great wonders.
That's great.
So movie 7 years ago, that was the Butterfly People?
No, actually, the 7 years ago movie was a screenplay. My story is pretty unique, okay? I mean, it's not – a lot of people have similar stories. But my family were from Oklahoma. They were farm people. They were uneducated. They migrated to California during the Great Depression and Dust Bowl and all those kinds of things. And I had some older siblings that was, you know, a whole generation different than me. And we were just this dysfunctional Oklahoma family that migrated to California and didn't fit in. And he couldn't read. My dad couldn't read and write. And he was a lot older than all my friends' dads. And we went through a lot of childhood trauma, abuse, just different things. And as I got older and started journeying, my spiritual journey started basically in full speed around 2001. And prior to that, you know, we grew up in church. I always went to church. I always kind of was a believer, but there was a time in my life where I fell away for many years as kind of the prodigal and got caught up in alcoholism and lots of stuff that just put my life in not a good place. I met a girl when I was 23 that we got married. We shouldn't have got married. It was a stupid decision, but we did. It lasted right around 9 years. And she was a Joplin girl. And so we migrated from California to Joplin basically because of at that time, my drinking was out of control. And we thought making a geographical change would solve that maybe. But anyway, we went through a divorce. I later married Cindy. We've been married. We're going on our 40th year pretty soon. I had a lot happen in my childhood. A lot of people do. A lot of people have childhood trauma. And the redemption in my life was pretty unique. And I had been doing genealogy work, and I found out about my grandmother. Her name was Mary Louisa McBroom. I never knew her. She was someone that actually spent 9 years at the insane asylum in Norman, Oklahoma, and died in 1943 by suicide. She set herself on fire. And I found out her story when I was doing genealogy. And I started in, I guess it was about 15, 16, 17, 18 years ago. Cindy and I were introduced to a ministry in Michigan called Open Hearts Ministry. They were doing something called The Journey, and it was a 12-week program for adult survivors of abuse. And so a lady at, we were going to College Heights at that time, and a lady there who was doing these groups asked if we would be willing to go up to Michigan and train to do these workshops. So I did. And I'll tell you what, I went through that 12-week workshop and I realized, I was like, oh, maybe 56, 57. I realized that all the struggles, everything I had been struggling with the alcoholism and everything else in my life, relationship issues, and just basically the prodigal son was all based on that childhood trauma, the wounds on my spirit that I had from growing up. So when I came to understand that around age 56, 57, it wasn't too long after that I started doing artwork. And that's another story. But one of the first things I wanted to do when I decided what I wanted to paint was some of the things I'd learned in that program called The Journey. One of the chapters in that 12-week workshop was about shame, and I did a painting about shame. And then as I started doing more, I realized I wasn't the best painter in the world, so I thought I'd try mixed media. And I did a couple of pieces about my family. I had some these old pictures I had from my family. And I did one, and I entered it in an art show in the Osho. Anyway, I won an award for mixed media, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And people were saying, you're on the right track. So I ended up doing a piece of art, and I did a piece of art about my grandmother that was in the insane asylum. And I don't know why I was doing it. I thought, who's going to buy this and hang it in their living room or something? Nobody's ever going to want to have this. But I felt compelled to tell this story about my grandmother. So I did this piece of art. And when I showed it on Facebook, it just really caught the attention of a lot of people. I got invited to do a show at Spiva, and it kind of got some national attention from the art world. And I thought, wow, this is kind of cool. And somebody says, you're on the right track. You need to do more of those. So I did. There was a lady at our church whose husband had late stage or early stage Alzheimer's and had just passed away. And she asked if I'd do a story, do a piece of art about his story. So I did a story about a piece of art about Alzheimer's. And I did another one about when I was about 10 or 11, I was sexually abused as a kid. Mm. And I thought I'd do a piece of art about that. And it was taking a risk. It really was risky to kind of put your story out in a public way. Yeah. And so I did this art exhibit. It ended up being about a 40, 50 piece art exhibit called Family Secrets. And at some point when I was getting ready to exhibit that at some places like Cotty College was in Nevada. They asked me to do a show there. Nevada was one of the five places in Missouri that had an insane asylum. Mm-hmm. If people remember, they tore it down, but people would say, you better watch yourself or I'm going to send you to Nevada. You know, it's a joke. But Nevada was one. We had one in St. Joseph and three more, I think, in Missouri. And so because of my art exhibit being about stuff that had to do with my grandmother and mental illness and other issues, I got invited to put an exhibit at the Glore Psychiatric Museum in St. Joseph. Mm. And so I had my exhibit there for a little over a year. And people would come through that museum from all over the world, and they left me notes about my pieces of art, about different things, especially the one about my sexual abuse experience was called Visiting Uncle Oscar. Okay, I'll leave it at that. That one, I had people that would write notes about that, say, thank you for doing that. That happened to me, and my exhibit opened the conversation with people that maybe hadn't talked about their own stories of stuff that happened to them and whatever. So it was kind of a conversation starter. Well, because I had gone up to the Glore Psychiatric Museum and saw firsthand some of the equipment and stuff they had at those insane asylums, how people were treated, whatever. Cindy and I were one day sitting in a theater. We got there early. They hadn't even started the previews yet. It was just a black screen. And I looked at the screen and I thought, my grandmother's story would really be cool up there on that screen. And I could just see it in my mind's eye, you know, kind of like the 30s depression era, sepia tone or whatever. Mm-hmm. I could just see that story up there. And that was the moment. That was a little over 7 years ago, seven and a half years ago. That was the moment I really believe God said, you need to make a movie about this story. And that story, my grandmother's story, ended up being my story. And it was a story of generational abuse that's passed on from generation to generation. And just like the Bible says, the sins of the fathers, you know, it was just an idea. And then I got home from the movie and I put a note on Facebook about, hey, I've got an idea for a movie if anybody knows any screenplay writers. And somebody connected me with somebody in Ohio that they knew, and his name was Rain, and he worked with me for about a year and a half and wrote this screenplay, and it was really good. And we kind of started sending it around to studios and different places, and it would come back unopened, refused, unopened. People, just nobody was interested in reading this screenplay. So there was a point where it was either just throw it in the trash and move on or do something different. And one morning I had kind of a dream or whatever. I woke up about 4 o'clock in the morning one morning and God just spoke to my heart about doing this nonprofit, to make the movie as a nonprofit. It wasn't about making money. It was about making a difference. Mm. And so that's how kind of Great Wonders got started. We started with that idea of making that movie that nobody would read the screenplay. And it was written originally as a narrative, which the way it was written and everything probably would have been a little too expensive to really do on our own. Looking at it now, looking back, knowing what I know now about filmmaking and being a little bit more knowledgeable about it, it probably would have been $10 million minimum to make it the way it was written. So we decided as an organization to try to do some things to kind of establish ourselves and make sure it wasn't all about just Steve Head's movie. So the first year, the first film we did was a documentary that I talked to Greg Fish. His dad works at Ozark, and we got Greg convinced. He had done a documentary about the tornado called Steadfast back around 2002, I guess, about a year after the tornado. And I convinced Greg to do a follow-up documentary about what was called the Butterfly People. All these kids in the tornado had told stories about seeing beings, and some of the little kids described them as butterfly people. Now, you know, you may or may not believe in angels or if that happened or whatever, but I thought it'd be an interesting documentary to do. Mm-hmm. So we started looking up some of these kids, and I found quite a few of them, and we ended up making the documentary, The Butterfly People. And that was, we produced that in our first year as a nonprofit. Another thing we did in our first year was we started a film festival. And we call it the Great Wonders Uplift Film Fest. And we were looking, how do we set yourself apart as a film festival? Because there's about 4,000 of them in the, I don't know, there's film festivals all over. So for our area, we thought we'd do something different to try to find uplifting films that were PG-13 and below, kind of family friendly, mm-hmm. inspiring stories that would make a difference. And so we didn't know if we would even have enough submissions the first year to make that successful, and didn't know how to go about really doing it, but we did. And we had about 88 submissions. We had some great films and we had a great festival, and it was, everybody that attended gave us a 5-star rating, and it all went well. So year two, we invited a guy named Kevin Downs, who is the CEO of Kingdom Story Company, one of the top 5 faith-based film producers in the world. We had to pay to get him here. The city of Joplin gave us a grant to pay to bring him here. And we brought him as our speaker last year. And it was intentional. It was intentional. I thought, how do you meet people in the movie business? They were sending my screenplay back unopened, you know? Yeah. So if I brought him here and met him in person, maybe, just maybe, he would take my screenplay home with him or something. But anyway, we did meet him. We got to get to know him a little bit. And I asked him afterwards if he might think about coming back again this next year? And would he let us give out an award, maybe called the Kevin Downs Award, for like a film that kind of fits the ethos of the kind of films his company makes? Some of the films he made, like they're working on right now, I can only imagine two. Mm-hmm. Some people may have seen I Can Only Imagine. The Unbreakable Boy was just out recently. They've done a lot of films, The Jesus Revolution, a lot of films people would recognize. And to have somebody like him get behind what we're trying to do and maybe be, who knows? I had no expectations. Mm-hmm, yeah. Just wanted to make a connection. So he did agree that he would come back this year. And he says, instead of the Kevin Downs Award, why don't you call it the Kingdom Story Company Award? And that's the name of his company. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to find, we think we have a couple of films that will fit that category that we're getting ready to start. We've been doing the judging this year. We opened it up to all over the United States. But we did end up this year making that film that originally kind of was the catalyst of Great Wonders Productions. We did the film and we did it as a documentary, kind of a docudrama, because we used some AI to create some scene, recreate some scenes and things and recreate things that actually happened. So it's really a story that goes all the way back to about 1890 to where my great-great-grandfather and maybe my grandmother, Mary Louisa McBroom, her childhood trauma. Then later on, her living in the insane asylum. She had 11 kids. One of those was my dad. And how did all of that affect my upbringing? Okay, so this movie connects all those dots. How does that generational abuse, that childhood trauma, that dysfunction, how does that keep getting transferred over and over and over to families? Just, I look at my family now, I've got nephews and nieces and people that still struggle with all kinds of problems. And I can see now, God gave me the spiritual eyes to be able to see what where all that came from. And it's heartbreaking. There's some in my family that will probably never heal. There are people sometimes beyond healing. It's not saying they're beyond redemption, and God's grace, but yeah, to become a fully functional human being after they've been through what they've been through and lived a life, let's say, of alcoholism or whatever, where it's damaged the brain so much that your brain doesn't even function anymore like a regular person. So there's people like that in my family. The story includes a lot of things that people at Wellspring or even people in Joplin would not know about me. People don't know that at one time over 40 years ago, I got a felony for trying to steal a lady's purse. People don't know when they look at Steve Head that he tried to kill himself more than once and almost did it. I shouldn't be here. I should be dead. There was a neurosurgeon in Joplin that told my then family that if I survived, it'd be about a 15% chance. And if I did, I'd probably be very brain damaged. But here I am. I didn't die. And God gave me a chance to do it all over again. And so this film is called The Redemption of Mary Louisa McBroom. Why is it called her redemption? Because her story was put in a box in a basement of that insane asylum, and there it stayed for many, many years. Family members did not talk about her. It was something shameful. When I asked about my grandmother, my parents said, oh, she died back during the war in the hospital. She could have died of old age for all I knew, you know, but no one told me that it was an insane asylum, and no one told me that she'd set herself on fire, things like that. So when I found out all those things and we put this story together, it's my story basically, but my story includes where I came from.
Yeah.
And how I got to be the kind of person I was and what happened and what that transformation looked like. And basically, Cindy and I went to College Heights Christian Church for about 36 years. So a lot of the people in the movie Randy Garris is in the movie. Now, Randy, if people know him, he was senior minister at College Heights for many, many years. Jay St. Clair is in the movie. Jay St. Clair is over executive director of God's Resort, and him and Julie have been friends for many years. Jay's part in this movie is just, to me, it's a key. Mm-hmm. Having different eyes and different voices speak to this story. And at God's Resort, they work with people that are struggling with the same kinds of things that I went through. It took many, many times to try over and over to get sober for good.
Yeah.
There were periods of times when I'd have maybe 3 or 4 years of sobriety and then chuck it all away on a bad decision, you know? And, all of that's covered in the film, and I would love for people at Wellspring to watch the movie and use it as a tool. We have another one we produced this year. We produced two this year. The other one is called Somewhere to Be, and it's a documentary about a family in Louisville, Kentucky, that weren't able to have kids of their own. They got into foster care, and they heard about a little baby that was left at the fire department in a Nike shoebox. And they were hoping that they would be the ones that got called when that baby was ready to be put into foster care, and they were. Mm. And so this story is about their getting this little baby named Samuel and then finally adopting him. And so this movie is about foster care and adoption. It's going to be showing December 14th at the Route 66 Theater, and we would love people to come out and see that. We're going to show another film with it called Simple Mercies. And it's a film by the same lady who's on our board. It's Karen Elizabeth. She directed the film. And we're going to show her two films. And we're going to have some folks from the foster care and adoption, kind of some people about that and about the Safe Haven baby boxes. Mm-hmm. So we would love for people to come out and see that on the 14th at the Route 66 Theater in downtown Webb City. Doors open at 5:30. And we're making that a free event. So people can come out and see that for free. If people want to see The Redemption of Mary Louise McBroom, right now we have it as a $5.99 rental. Mm-hmm. And even though it's a rental, it's really a donation. That money goes to make more films in the future and help offset the cost of what it took to make the film. All they got to do is just go to marymcbroom.com. And it'll take them right to the link where they can rent it, watch it at home. I just met at lunch today with somebody from Ozark Center, who's an executive there, that we're talking about maybe doing a screening and invite all the counseling community and the church community, whatever, and make it as an event and have a lot of people that are in the counseling fields and working with people with addictions and struggles, and maybe have them come watch the movie as a group and give their input. There's a guy we've come across, another God thing. God just keeps connecting us with people. Even though Kevin Downs coming back in March for our film festival, there's another producer who produces film Christian films. His name is Darren Moorman. And Darren he told me he's going to be watching the film in the next few days, and he's interested maybe in helping us get it out into bigger, more national or worldwide distribution. So there we go. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Well, cool. How do people find all of your movies? Do you have all of your movies in one place?
Yeah, if they go to, like, say, the Butterfly People, mm-hmm. if they go to butterflypeoplemovie.com or marymcbroom.com. Okay. Those links take you to a site that's our own Uplift streaming channel. Okay. That URL is a little bit harder for people to remember, so I try to have redirect URLs that are easy to remember, like Butterfly People Movie. That's easy to remember.
Yeah.
Mary McBroom. So if you go to those, it'll go to the streaming channel to watch the film. But if they get there and want to do a search, they can see all the films that are on there. We have several films on there that are all uplifting, inspiring films. We'd love people to see those and support the filmmakers that made them.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It's pretty comprehensive. You covered a lot really fast. I'm impressed.
Yeah, from the 1890s to the present day in 30 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, awesome. Well, we do hope that you guys enjoyed this one. It is a little bit different than what we normally do, but, you know, we don't want to just be stuck in one box. So, Steve, I appreciate you coming in and sharing.
Hey, I'm honored that you would ask me. I appreciate it.
We're glad to have you. It gives a chance to learn a little bit more about our church and the people that are involved and call this home. So,
yeah.
Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about the other thing called Create to Educate, but if people want to get involved with some really cool ministries that have to do with art and kids and Africa and things, have them look me up at church.
Okay. Say that. What was that organization one more time?
Create2educate.us.
.us.
Okay. Go there and you can kind of see what we're doing. And we've got something going on right now at Spiva Center for the Arts. And it's going to be a big deal for some kids in Uganda coming up here in about 3 weeks. Oh.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you again, Steve. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. That's the Wellspring Podcast. We'll see you guys next week. Or you'll hear us next week. Yeah. Thanks.